Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We've got a special guest today, Andy Schoonover. You are the CEO of Crowd Health. That's correct. And you live here in Austin. I wasn't aware of that.
I do. About 15 minutes from here.
How long have you been here?
10 years.
Oh, wow. What made you decide to move to
Austin?
Down
from Ohio. Are you the Ohio guy or something?
No, that's Ross. He's the other one. Yeah.
I sold my last company. It was negative 12 degrees outside. And so I kind of made a joke. I was like, I know that God does not intend for people to live in Ohio.
No.
Like, I gotta get south. I gotta get a little warmer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, birds know what's up. They leave.
They go
south for the winter.
Exactly.
So you grew up in Ohio?
Yeah. Yeah. Cincinnati. Mm. So we got a bunch of Bengals fans in my family. Don't judge me too bad.
They should draft some offensive linemen at some point so they can keep their generational quarterback on.
It's
the
reason they lost the Super Bowl against the Rams. That offensive line sucked.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And then you're getting your guy hurt too, which is.
And then Joey Burrow gets hurt every other week,
every other year for real. He's missed significant time now. But we're not here to talk about football.
Let's see, football or healthcare? What do people want to talk about?
Well, I mean, so you can call it healthcare, but it's sick care.
It is.
Right? These days. I've been talking to more and more people about this, people who have started startups in the medical space, or people who, do diet and nutrition stuff, primarily on the let's eat more meat side, right? Instead of the government propaganda we've been getting for the last 70 years.
The food pyramid,
right?
that was set up to make us healthy, and here we are. You know, 10% of our population has diabetes versus 1% of the population had diabetes when that stupid food pyramid came out.
Yeah, well, another 30% of the population is in pre-diabetes as well. So we're doing pretty well, I guess. it's very bizarre. So let's start at the beginning. You grew up in Ohio. What'd you do? What were your parents like? What would you do around there?
I actually grew up in St. Louis.
Okay.
St. Louis, spent some time in D.C. My dad actually worked for the government. it may be now why I hate the government so much.
Yeah.
Went out to the left coast and did business school out there. Mm. Moved back to the Midwest and ran a healthcare company for about 8 years.
What was the company?
We were monitoring, funny enough, I was selling into health insurance plans, monitoring people who have chronic conditions. So, high blood pressure.
This is before or after Obamacare?
This is, let's see, Obamacare was about 10 years ago. So this would have been before Obama, no, right during Obamacare.
Okay.
Yeah, so right during Obamacare.
The reason I ask is because the industry outlook on pre-existing conditions changed pretty significantly.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Right around Obamacare, that changed.
And what you guys monitored, you were collecting data or what
collecting data from folks who were in the Medicare population. Mm-hmm. So if they had congestive heart failure or diabetes or something like that, we would be monitoring them. If their blood sugars went up, we'd call them and be like, hey, what are you eating? Did you take your insulin? All those kinds of things to keep people out of the hospital.
So kind of like a concierge consultancy to some degree, right?
These health insurance plans, I mean, these people are going to the hospital 3, 4, 5 times a year because of, their diabetes getting out of control or whatever it is. And so we were monitoring that to make sure that we'd catch them before they went into the hospital. And so that's why the health plans were paying us. So
how did that work? Were they wearing a device or were they uploading their information somewhere?
They just stepped on a scale or weight scale, or their glucometer had a little adapter, and we'd had a Bluetooth monitor in their house that would capture that information, send it to us. We had a call center of nurses who would watch it and call them if something went crazy. So that company went from like 20 people to 400 people in 6 years.
Mm.
So just it blew up primarily because we have so many freaking people with chronic conditions in this country, right?
Yeah. What do you think that was? Why do you think that took so long for somebody to do something like that, to be honest? Because I didn't see a lot of companies doing that until, I mean, there's a lot to do it now, or there, a lot of people are trying to get into that space to do like preventative medicine or prophylactic medicine, whatever you want to call it. But
funny enough, we bought this company, and it was I Fall and I Can't Get Up company. Mm. You remember Fall and I Can't Get Up, that stupid commercial? It's like, you know, it's, we were a competitor to theirs. Mm. And so we came in, we bought this company, and they have these little devices around their neck. You know, they press the button when they fall. And I'm like, okay, we're being reactive. What if we put a little Bluetooth module in there so that we can start capturing data off some of these Bluetooth devices? And so it was really just like a, let's be proactive instead of reactive. And that turned the company from, like I said, a couple dozen to a few hundred people. So that was kind of the big revelation. Why didn't other people do that? I don't know. The healthcare industry is so stale, you know, in terms of innovation, especially 10 years ago when I was running that company. Regulatory issues, government, you know, all kinds of things that people looked at healthcare and was like, you know what, I'm not going to embark upon that. So you need people kind of from outside the industry to come in and say, screw that. I don't care the way that it's been. What way should it be? Yeah. And that's just kind of my approach I've taken for healthcare, my last couple companies.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a very lucrative industry and,
$4.3 trillion.
Yeah. Profit motive is a problem in this. Not that, you know, people like innovative ideas and good products should make money. Sure. But, it's always kind of rubbed me the wrong way that we tell people in the U.S. especially that they can be as healthy as they can afford to be, right? That seems like not that, you know, you shouldn't have to work and or pay for things. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that we invest money in all sorts of other shit to make sure our population is educated, although we do a poor job at that as well, but at least there's an infrastructure for it, right? We do a lot to make sure that our nation's secure, although we don't do a good job of that either, right?
Getting worse and worse.
It's getting worse and worse, both with funding police and in border situations, things like that. But at least those infrastructures exist. For a very long time, healthcare was like, good luck, asshole, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully nothing goes wrong if you're lucky enough to afford insurance, you know. But I always thought health insurance was a scam anyways. It's kind of like, it's like usury when it comes to mortgages. I've always thought there's something insidious about that because if you, you know, if you look at the rate of income to cost of housing, back in 1950, a house cost about $11,000, right?
Wow.
And the average person was making $5,000 to $6,000 a year. It's like, okay, so double your annual salary.
Yeah.
Then sometime between the 70s and 90s, it became triple your annual salary. Now it's like 8 to 10 times your annual salary. And the reason that any of that can even happen is because banks will take super suspect loans or give loans to people that they shouldn't be getting, right?
Yeah.
But the money just kind of vanishes into thin air. But, you know, people are buying more and more expensive homes. But it's the quality, I don't know that the quality of the home is that much more than it was back then. It's just they're charging more because they can, because somebody's going to pay for it. And that is a great analog for the way that health insurance works in America, right? You can speak a lot to that. Like the difference between the health insurance cost and the cash price of procedures and medications. It's fucking crazy.
It's crazy. Well, look, you know, the entire middle class rate increases have been wiped out from health insurance, meaning like your salary adjusted for your health insurance cost has gone up by 0% over the last 50 years, right? So health insurance has totally wiped it out. And so, you know, I think the issue here that we have is that when you don't pay for something directly, you don't care what it costs.
Right.
And that's what's happening with health insurance, right? Mm. Like you're going into the hospital, you're like, give me whatever you got. You know, I don't have to pay for it. Somebody else is paying for it. When somebody else pays for it, you don't care. right? And that's the problem that we're having with health insurance. And so we're supposed to give, you know, our agency to these health insurance plans, and the health insurance plans actually make more money when we're sick.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah. You have this medical industrial complex of hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, and health insurance companies. They all make more money when you're sick. I mean, why do we think we're getting more sick? Like, it doesn't take a, you know, brain surgeon to, you know, no pun intended, for the people to figure out, you know, why healthcare is getting more expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so also the healthcare provider doesn't care.
No, they don't even know.
Yeah. They don't care that people in primary healthcare and emergency rooms and shit like that. You can say whatever you want to about their motivations and shit like that, but they are getting bonuses for pushing shit that people don't need. There's no question about that, right? And they're doing
it. No question.
They're doing it. So, you know, I know the Hippocratic Oath says do no harm, but it doesn't just mean do no harm physically. I think it's supposed to be like being a dick in this industry is off limits. Like, you can go be a dick in business somewhere, but in this industry, in health, that's what the Hippocratic Oath really means. Don't bring that shit here. You know what I mean? But I've heard from a bunch of people recently, even that, they'll go to the doctor, and get offered multiple medications for something that they're like, where's the primary care physician that does what your company used to do, which is, I see these underlying factors. I'm like, hey, well, here's the root cause of that. Change your diet.
Right. It's a pharma first.
Right.
Type
because
of
they
situation.
Get paid for it. Right. How is that not breaking the Hippocratic Oath? That's the question I have, frankly, because I think that's kind of fucked up.
Well, I always say, like, you work for whoever pays you, and doctors are getting paid by health insurance plans. So your doctor doesn't work for you. So if you walk in your doctor's office and you think your doctor is taking care of your best interest, no, no, no. The doctor is taking care of the health insurance company's best interest. Mm-hmm. That's who's paying them, right? And so
that's a good point. I mean, you're not the customer.
No, you're not the customer.
The health insurance provider is the customer, or the pharmaceutical company is the customer.
Yeah. I'm uninsured. I have no insurance. I'm the customer now, right? So I'm paying the doctor directly. The doctor knows that. I'll give you a quick example. I was in a doctor's office, I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago. And I had to get a heart scan that I got for $175. Mm-hmm. A buddy tweeted me or DM'd me on Twitter, said he got the exact same surgery through health insurance for $7,000.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But the doctor, he's like, look, typically what I do is I call you back in here to go over your scan. But since you're uninsured and you're paying on your own, can I just call you? And I'm like, do you really want me? I mean, I don't really want to go into the doctor's office and sit in the waiting room with a bunch of sick people and, you know, waste 2 hours of my life doing all this stuff. Call me. He called me. He's like, hey man, your scan looked great. And if I would have walked in, $250.
Yeah.
You know, just for walking in the door of a doctor's office. Right. So if you go uninsured, which is what I will propose to people, you actually are now the customer. For the first time, you're the customer of these doctors, and they treat you differently. It's an amazing thing.
It is. I mean, one of the biggest culprits is the MRI, right?
Yeah.
I think the going rate for a health insurance covered MRI is $3,500.
Yep.
Right?
That's probably about right.
It should be like $75, to be honest. That machine costs $3 million. The best version of it that exists, brand new, costs $3 million. You don't have to spend a whole lot of time doing the math on that.
Right.
Right. They're doing 5 to 8 MRIs a day. So within a very short amount of time, that thing is paid for, and it's like, all right, cool. So what exactly am I paying for? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It becomes very obvious. Like, some of the stuff is more obvious than others. Some of the machinery or some of the procedures, like, well, how do you put a price on heart surgery, for example? Mm-hmm. Right. But you can, some of the more concrete stuff is, the upcharge on the multipliers on just not even prescription drugs, just like Tylenol and shit like that.
Yeah.
Right. Like $27 for a Tylenol or for two. Sorry. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, cool. I could have bought stock in the company for that.
I'll give you a perfect example of this. An IV. So this bag full of salt water, basically, you can buy it off the internet for $3.
Yeah.
It's connected to a $2 tube that is connected to a $1,200 pump that's connected to another $2 tube that goes inside you. So we've got a total of about $1,200 worth of stuff here.
Right.
Over a 24-hour period, unfortunately, I was in the hospital 6 weeks ago. Over a 24-hour period, they charged me $5,400 for that bottle of that bag of water for 24 hours. I mean, that's how ridiculous and silly this is. I'm fighting it, and I will probably end up fighting it in court because I'm tired of putting up with this crap. But the hospital charged $5,400 for a bag of salt water.
Yeah, so other industries are regulated. People that are mechanics or work on cars, veterinarians even, they have to give you an estimate of the cost before they can do anything, right? And you have to approve of that estimate first.
Yeah.
It's not the case in healthcare.
You can ask for it. Oftentimes they won't give it to you, or they'll say, "We just don't know."
Right, but there's no legal requirement for them to do it.
There's no legal requirement for them
to me.
For them to do it.
I understand it in an emergency situation if you're incapacitated or something, but if you're sitting there conscious and alert, and you're like, "Yeah, it'll feel good," and they're like, "Well, here's what the test says, and here's what we should probably do."
Here's what your cost will be
if
we go that direction.
Yeah,
what do you think? No, they're not built that way because they're built on a business-to-business relationship, right?
Explain the customer.
So typically what happens here, it's between the hospital and the insurance company with us just being a cog in the system, right? And so
you have two corporate dicks arguing over your health.
Exactly.
Basically.
Whereas I'm the one actually being, quote-unquote, cared for, right? Now, if this was a direct-to-consumer type of situation where the consumer is actually the payer. Again, the hospital, I'm not the hospital's customer because I'm not paying them historically, kind of with the insurance framework. Mm-hmm. So it's not a direct to consumer, setup system. So they can't even tell me right now. I was in the hospital 6 or 8 weeks ago. They still can't tell me what was provided, in detail.
Yeah.
I had to dig for it. And I think there is a clear evasive strategy here when it comes to customers that they don't want to really tell you what the cost is because they know that they're scamming us. One other quick one. Here's just a crazy situation. So I went into the hospital. They thought I was having a stroke. I was actually had a migraine. Mm. And so after 3 hours, they knew I was having a migraine, but the neurologist wasn't around to tell me that. So they kept me overnight. The next morning, an occupational therapist and a physical therapist showed up and said, "Hey, we just got to do some, like, this is just to get you out of here. Like, we just got to do a couple things." So they made me put on my socks, brush my teeth, and walk down the hall 20 steps, literally 10 minutes. I get the bill. They charged me 6 15-minute visits, each for $400.
What is it, an attorney? To charge it by the quarter hour now? What the hell, dude?
Yeah, well, it was $2,400 they charged me for those 10 minutes. But they charged me for 3 visits each, so 6 visits total. So these hospitals are doing things that are clearly illegal, but we as consumers don't have a ton of power because we can go to the attorney general's office and say, these people are scamming me. But in essence, what we're going to do is we're taking these hospitals to court. I mean, you will see lawsuits filed by us against big hospital systems that says, you can't do this anymore.
When you say us, who do you mean?
Like Crowd Health.
Okay. So I don't know how familiar you are with the mafia, but this is a bust out. This is what it is. So you need money, or you've gambled with my organization and now you owe me money.
Yeah.
And you own a company, right? You own a fucking, I don't know, whatever, a gas station, right? So I come down to your company and I start having you, to pay me back, charge things on your credit that we know you're never going to pay. And we keep doing that until you run out of credit and the business shuts down and I take all the money to pay back the debt you owe. That's called a bust out. And when you consider that 83% of all privately filed bankruptcies in America are because of unpaid medical expenses,
yep.
The hospital, the medical industrial complex is a cartel that is busting out citizens in this country. Like,
I think cartel is an absolutely accurate statement.
it's insane to me that this has been allowed to go on for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't been going on as long as our fucked up education system, but maybe you know more about when it started, but my understanding is sometime in the 70s is where this shit started.
Well, there's that website, right? Like WTF 1972. Have you ever seen that? Mm-hmm. I think it's 1972. It might be 1971, but it's like all this, shit hit the fan in the early 1970s. We got our monetary systems got depegged to gold. Mm. We got a food pyramid introduced. We had all these things happen in the 1970s. We got all the subsidization of the grain and, you know, that corn types of stuff, yeah. Corn and all that kind of stuff. And so in the 1970s, we went from 1% of diabetes to 10% diabetes today. We went from, you know, almost no inflation to crazy high inflation. And so all these things happened in the 1970s. And so there's actually a website with a bunch of graphs on it that show how almost every part of our life changed in, you know, within an 18-month span. At least that's when it started. So it's a crazy, crazy website.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it before. It is pretty wild. I think the gold standard was 79. Is that right?
I think so, it was earlier than that.
Maybe it was 73 or 74.
Something like that. Mid-70s.
It may have been in the earliest, but it was, yeah, between like 72 and 79, I think,
yeah,
is
somewhere
where everything, because I think the last one was, it was wheat or corn subsidies was the last one. I don't know. I haven't looked at the site in a while, but yeah, it's really interesting information on there. And you can draw your own conclusions about it. Some of this stuff is I do think, intended to be nefarious. Some of it is just bureaucratic bloat, right? It happens when the mission statement goes from do no harm to, you know, increase profitability. Obviously, you know, your tactics are going to change quite a bit. This episode is also brought to you by blackriflecoffee.com, the best coffee in the world. As a matter of fact, they won both the gold and bronze medal at the Golden Bean Awards this year for their exclusive coffee club entries in the elite category. So the best coffee on earth literally was Circus Bear by Black Rifle, one of their ECS. So I recommend that you go sign up for the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Use the code CITIZEN. You're going to get those points off. And, you know, you get all the benefits for being in the coffee club. You get the free shipping. You get access to all the partner deals. You get access to the exclusive coffee club. You get access to any new products that come out before anybody else does. You know, it's a very large club that they have over there, and the coffees are premium. Every single one of them is good. You're going to get experience for you. You can do just the plain coffee club, and if you want your two bags of espresso or your two bags of silencer smooth or whatever it is you drink, you can get those two bags or one bag or whatever you want every month. Or rather, you can use the ECS, the Exclusive Coffee Club, and get access to some of the most premium coffees on the planet and kind of learn what it is that you like. You know what I mean? So then you can order those premium coffees from Black Rifle as well. So, and we all know they got the best branding, the best merch, and they're buddies. You know, we're all friends here. We love Black Rifle. So go to blackriflecoffee.com, sign up for the coffee club, or buy something, do whatever you want. Use the code CITIZEN, you're going to get those points off.
Well, I think a lot of this, too, is government comes in and puts all these regulations in place for, quote-unquote, consumer protection. And consumer protection, from my perspective, is often just camouflage for tyranny.
Oh, yeah. Competition is consumer protection.
Exactly.
Right? That, I mean, there's no better no better consumer protection than transparent competition. Because if Hospital A in town, and these days, there's two or three hospital groups that are buying up all the local hospitals as well.
Exactly.
So it's getting way worse over the last 5 years. It's gotten way worse than it ever has been before. But even in this places now where you do have local hospitals, you're not getting cheaper procedures there for the most part. They're still working off of the same schedule as everybody else because that's what the healthcare or the health insurance companies will allow them to do.
Yes.
Because they're the ones footing the bill for everything.
And health insurance plans are now buying up doctors as well. So United Healthcare is the largest employer of doctors in the United States.
How is that not a conflict? I don't understand that.
Well, here's
like you would never be able to do that in any other industry. You couldn't be a mortgage broker and a real estate agent at the same time.
These health plans,
you would go to prison because that's fraud.
They're supposed to be negotiating on our behalf, right?
Yeah.
But they're negotiating with themselves because they own the doctor. Right. So you're on both sides of that negotiation. So what are you going to do? Here's what's happening, or allegedly per a lawsuit. It is United Healthcare goes in to a doctor, and United Healthcare is now 40 or 50% of your revenue. They come in and they say, I'm going to drop your rate by 30%. Mm. Right. And the doctor says no. And then United Healthcare is like, fine, I'm going to take you out of network. So your revenue is going to drop in half. And you can do that, or you can just sell your practice to me. And so what is the doctor to do? Like, they have no other choice
But I mean, again, that's mafia behavior.
It's right? and there's a lawsuit going on currently because United Healthcare continues to do that. So it is mafia cartel like behavior, and all of these health plans are in this wink wink kind of thing with hospital systems because they both want prices to go up. Now, that's the big thing that people don't understand about insurance companies. Insurance companies actually want the price to go up.
Mm-hmm. Right? And they want you to use their service more, too.
Yeah. Well, a couple things is if healthcare was really affordable, then there would be a less likelihood you want health insurance.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, if healthcare was more affordable.
Yeah, because there's some industries, like men's health, for example, TRT and peptides mm-hmm. are easy to compound and relatively cheap. Health insurance companies want nothing to do with that shit. They won't even talk to you about it because they can't make any fucking money because there's so many ways to get it already. And it is probably out of all the pharmacological healthcare provider groups, it's probably the most decentralized. You know what I mean? Because it kind of started illegally back in the day. And now it's just kind of grown into the legal version now. But most of the, like, I know 10 different people that own men's health clinics of one variety or another, and none of them even talk to insurance companies.
They're right.
Like, yeah, we don't need those assholes. We're doing just fine without them.
The more you stay outside of that, the better you're going to be.
Yeah, so they're not even coming in. So what's the next thing then?
Well, the other thing too is, so in Obamacare, there's a rule that said you can only profit 15% of premiums, right? So let's walk through the math. If your premium is $1,000, the health insurance plan can make $150. Mm-hmm. These are for-profit entities. They want to grow their revenue. So mm-hmm. how do you get from $150 and grow it to 10% to $165? Well, guess what? Your premium has to go up from $1,000 to $1,100. So insurance plans can actually make more money as your premiums go up. So that's their incentive for long-term for the cost of care to go up. So you have pharmaceutical companies, they clearly want the price to go up. You have hospitals, they want the price to go up. You have health insurance plans, they want the price to go up. The three components of the medical industrial complex all want the price to go up. So guess what? The price is going up, right? So if you pay in cash, you rip the health insurance out of the middle of that, and we're getting, for our members, 50% better prices than health insurance plans.
Yeah.
So United Healthcare is the seventh largest company on the planet by revenue.
What percentage? So let's say we've got, just for round numbers sake, we've got $1 trillion to spend on healthcare of all sorts, right? In the U.S.
It's $4.3 trillion, but
no. Well, I mean, I'm just saying for round numbers, so we can do the quick math for the listener. Let's say it's $1 trillion we spend on healthcare. How much of that is going towards actual healthcare? One, that's part one of the question, versus how much is going to administrative and profit fees. Mm-hmm. And then the second part of that question is, what should that healthcare cost actually be if it wasn't inflated?
So I'll say that 8% is actually going to the doctors. So 8% on your, 8 cents on the dollar is actually going to doctors. So 92%.
I mean, you would expect 16% and then another 8 to go to their ancillary staff in a normal business, right? So like your head chef might make 8% at your 8% of the revenue at your restaurant, and the wait staff and kitchen staff would make the additional 8%.
Right.
That's typically how it goes. Somewhere around 33%, like 25 to 33% of your revenue goes towards your employees, typically. This is pretty far from that.
Yeah, it's pretty far.
This is not like at your business, your employees probably make more than 8% of the revenue.
Yes.
That's a normal fucking business.
Much more.
Right?
Much more.
Jesus Christ. That's insane. I honestly thought it was 20%.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, that's kind of fucked up.
Each doctor has 3 billing people per doctor to bill health insurance. So
it's just bureaucracy.
Each doctor spends about 30% of their time dealing with health insurance. So again, if I can go and pay with a credit card, you have a 1.5% or 2% fee, right? Just to pay the credit card. The doctor gets 30% of their time back. They fire 3 billing people. Mm. Like, it is probably 40 to 50% of total costs are just bureaucratic administrative BS. So, kind of going back to the bigger number, right? $4.3 trillion in healthcare expenses, probably $2 trillion of it is in bureaucratic rent seekers, middlemen.
So that's just, you know, there's a lot of words for that. Pork, I guess. If it was
pork.
If it was a spending bill, sure. It would be pork. Waste, maybe. Fraud, to be honest. I mean, you know, but this is how the parallels between how government work and how our healthcare industry works are, it is identical. Right?
Yeah, very, very similar.
For different reasons, probably, but they arrive at the same conclusion, which is, you know, when I worked for the federal government back in the day, this was the government math. So I worked in fraud detection and national security at immigration. We did investigations on fraud and national security issues relating to immigration. Congress passes a bill and says we need X, Y, and Z done regulatory by this organization for the year. And then Office of Personnel Management, OPM, says, okay, well, based on our information, it requires two people to do that amount of work. So mm-hmm. we're going to give you two billets so you can hire two people to do that work. So you hire them. 2 years go by. The work's not getting done because one of those two people is a fucking dummy, right? Just a completely useless human being. And they're like, oh, it's actually going to take four people to get this work done based on the data now we have after 2 years. So they hire two additional people. Probably one of them is a piece of shit. And now you have four people doing the work of one person. And it just keeps going on and on like that forever. And it becomes notoriously difficult to fire that employee because of the federal employees union. Mm-hmm. Now on the medical side, they don't want to fire that employee because if they don't have people working on the Epic coding system, punching in their fucking medical data and working with the software or pushing out stuff to the health insurance companies, then they're going to get, like you said, removed from
the network.
From the network. It's like different, but the same, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the outcome is the same. It's just bullshit all the time.
I think it's a lot like the military industrial complex. I mean, I think it's a lot like,
well, you've seen some of those bills plus, like fucking $150 for a hammer or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, not the one you've got, by the way. That's the dumbest hammer I've ever seen.
The pink one out there.
Yeah.
You know, I saw something the other day where like an RPG made in the United States is something like $4,000. The same RPG made in Russia is $400. And so they were talking about how all these cost plus contracts, all they do is incentivize people to have their costs go up. Right. And they kind of look at each other and say, well, this is my cost. And so, you know, I make a hell of a lot more money if the cost is $1,000 and I get it 10% on top of that, as opposed to $100 and getting 10% off of that. Right. So everybody's incentivized to have the price go up. Same thing with hospitals. Hospitals don't have a cost plus system, but what they do have is they can't make too much money or else they look really, really bad publicly. Mm. So they keep it within that 3-5% range and they say, look at me, I'm only making 3-5%. I can't make more money. You know, we're almost going out of business. But in essence, what they're doing is they're just letting cost rise so they can keep that 3-5%. I would say hospitals are probably the most poorly run businesses in the country because of that reason. There's a graph. I don't know if you've seen it online on Twitter or something where it's since 1970s, the growth in physicians is like barely growing. Mm-hmm. The growth in administration goes up like a hockey stick.
It's the same thing in secondary education, by the way. So college.
Doubt it.
So the average, the total amount spent relative to inflation, the total amount spent on professors has gone up about 30% since the mid 1970s. 2,000% for administrators.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's probably that data is from 2018. It's probably worse now with all the DEI and all that other bullshit, right? So it's probably way worse than that now. But it's why is this happening in every single major industry in this country, including government?
because the government is getting involved in these industries, right? Like, the government is super involved in healthcare.
If somebody's got an
education,
illness, if somebody's
military.
Got an illness and they start showing up to things and everybody else catches that illness, it's pretty easy to say that that was the cause.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Holy shit.
I mean, the three we just talked about, though, right? Healthcare, education, military. Mm-hmm. I mean, the government has stuck its nose in all three of those things, and they've all gone awry, I think, because of their involvement. Like, let industry do its thing, and everybody's like, oh, they're going to take advantage of me and you and da 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 da.
Then
do something about it. Yeah. But the vast majority of the time, you're going to the gas station. It says $2.75. You plug in it's $2.75. You don't have to haggle with the guy. If you don't like $2.75, go to the guy down the road. That's $2.68 or whatever, right? Like, you have choice. Let's maximize freedom of choice. And the government, anytime they stick their nose in something, limits our choice. And here we are in a situation where many Americans are required to get health insurance by government.
I mean, technically you are
technically
required, right?
There's no penalty for it anymore on the federal level. There are in five different states, and you can probably pick and choose which ones they are. I mean,
let's see, California, New York, Massachusetts, Washington, maybe.
You're pretty darn close.
Yeah,
it's California, Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island, I think Maryland and DC are the five.
Jesus.
But it's not Texas. Yeah. It's not Florida. It's not those states.
The business model that you're describing here, I just want to make this really clear for the audience, is we have, let's just say for the sake of argument, we've got a corporate charter that limits our profitability to 3%.
Right? Yeah.
That's our profit margin. Our gross revenue is going to be 3% of revenue. The only way to grow, and these are, some of these are, is United Healthcare publicly traded?
Yeah, publicly traded.
The fuck, man? Why would that be a thing? Why would there be a publicly traded healthcare system? You know what I mean? That's crazy. Anyways.
10% of all healthcare costs go through United Healthcare.
So the only way for them to increase their stock price, which is their real product, right? If you're a publicly traded company, your product is your stock.
Yeah.
So the only way for them to increase their stock price is to increase profitability, but they can't increase net revenue, so they have to increase revenue.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that is to get more customers or charge them more.
Exactly.
Like, not even more money, but charge them more frequently as well. Like,
exactly.
There's two ways to do that. So attrition or just with cost. That is, if you presented that in a business school, your professor would be like, get the fuck out of here. This is not a business model.
Totally.
You can't do this. The only way to do this is with an authoritarian regime.
Yeah.
Right? This is Venezuela with their oil industry. This is not how you're supposed to run a fucking business. But if you have the government telling people that they have to.
And you got a ton of money, and you're paying more on lobbyists than anybody else, and you're contributing to more politicians than anybody else. And so, a lot of these politicians just kind of look aside and be like, yeah, well,
Yeah.
So it's, again, the medical industrial complex runs the healthcare system. They're all, or the vast majority of them, are either for-profit or they're nonprofits that act like for-profits, and they're paying their CEOs $12 million a year, right? So it doesn't really matter if they're for-profit or nonprofit. They act the same way.
Are there no, There really aren't many lobbying regulations in the U.S., to be honest. But you would think in healthcare, are there laws that prevent primary care providers in hospitals from pimping medications and shit like that? Like, we have laws about what you can put in an advertisement on television and who
Yes.
you can target and things like that. But I don't think the hand-to-hand, face-to-face advertisement that gets paid for by United Healthcare and others to your doctor, your primary care physician, I don't think that's very regulated, is it?
I have no idea on the pharma side if that's regulated or not. I mean, it sure as hell should be. Right? If you're getting paid to pimp drugs, that aren't benefiting you, that sure as hell should be.
Well, it happened with the COVID vaccine, right? Hospitals were getting paid to
Getting paid more for COVID-related deaths, they put a bunch of deaths that weren't COVID-related. If they had COVID, it would be COVID-related death because they got paid significantly more.
They were like gunshot victims who had COVID, and they wrote them as
because
you get 10 grand for each one of them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's
Here's what they will regulate.
Well, can you, as somebody that works in the industry, why? Why did they pay more to have somebody registered as a COVID death?
They wanted, in essence, what they wanted to do is they wanted hospitals to focus on COVID people.
Right, but when they die, this is my brain, the only reason I can think of is to inflate the numbers, right? But to what end? Right?
If that's the nefarious look at it, which I don't disagree with, by the way, but what their pitch was is saying, hey, hospitals, we want you to take care of COVID people. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if you take care of COVID people, we will give you an extra spiff. And the only way for us to measure that is by mortality. So if you have a COVID person who dies, we'll give you an additional $10,000 because it costs a lot to see that person in that last couple of days of life. So we'll give you an extra $10,000 if that happens to you. We want to take care of you, hospitals. We want to make sure that you are taking care of our people, you know, and so that's how we'll do it. That's what their pitch was. But did it inflate COVID numbers? Absolutely it did. There's absolutely no doubt. I don't think anybody on the left or the right will argue with the fact that inflated COVID numbers, and it's nearly impossible now to go backwards and figure out what the actual numbers were. I mean, there's been many studies on this, but
I mean, I've seen some crazy ones, like 90%. I don't think it was that high.
Yeah,
because we have a lot.
I've seen 50 to 70, but yeah. I mean, regardless, if it's 50, I mean, cut your COVID numbers in half, and we're looking a lot like a bad flu season than a COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
So it's craziness. I mean, there's clearly these politicians. I love your shirt, defund politicians. Like, they're in it for control. They're not in it to make our lives better. Sure, yeah. And therefore, they want to make regulations that under the kind of the precipice of we're protecting you. And it's clearly a control move, unfortunately. And we're seeing it in healthcare in probably the most significant way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's health, like, and food as well. I would say food as well.
Oh,
right?
Man, food.
But it's like,
we have another hour.
Yeah. Well, we talk about food here all the time. That's one of the things I focus on the most. The one thing you definitely can have control over, like environmental factors, to some degree you can have control over, but what you choose to put in your body, that's the first line of defense, to be honest. And, you mentioned the food pyramid early in the show. We told people that fat was bad for them, right? And grain was good for them. Both of those things are untrue. Grain isn't terrible for you necessarily, but as a primary source of nutrition, it definitely is. So we came out with all these products that were low fat, high sugar. And then we're like, oh, sugar's not great. So we make fake sugar, which was even worse than the real sugar we were using.
Yeah.
So now we have people, I've explained this on the show before, so I don't go too far into it, but lipids carry nutrients into your bloodstream the same way that salt carries water in your muscles and bloodstream. So without fat in your diet, you are malnourished. That's just the way it fucking works, right? So now we have malnourished and obese people. We have malnourished people with diabetes. That shouldn't even be fucking possible.
I know.
And that is very common now in our country. Something like 40% of the country is either diabetic or in pre-diabetes right now.
Yeah.
And most of them are probably malnourished because they're eating boxed and bagged and canned food that's not real food. It's just bullshit. This is the least you can do, is put good food into your body.
Yeah. So of that $4 trillion I talked about earlier, a trillion of it is spent on diabetics.
Oh, my God. So heart disease is, 20% of all-cause deaths, something like that? But we're spending 25% of our healthcare revenue on
diabetics. Yeah. Well, I mean, diabetics, the probability of heart disease, goes up significantly. So in essence, we're seeing cardiovascular disease go up because of the rise of diabetes from my perspective.
Like constriction of veins and things like that, bad blood flow.
Right? Yeah, I mean, it's all the, I mean, I think it is all the carbs are the things that are creating the plaque within your coronary artery, which is, taking these people out pretty quick.
We're really dumb. Like, for like it was really easy for the government and marketing companies to convince people that fat made you fat. You know what I mean? I guess it makes sense. But it doesn't. It,
for simple minded, it's like, oh yeah, for sure. That makes sense.
But drinking milk doesn't make you produce milk. I mean, like if you're a woman and you're running low, like if you're breastfeed your kid, you're running low, you can't just go drink a quart. You know what I mean? And turn that into breast milk.
That's totally.
That's fucking retarded.
I mean, I think insulin, in essence, is the canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean,
insulin. It's been a big problem. And I think that's, we can talk about this more after you explain this, but I think the effects of, from fasting, intermittent fasting, and from cold plunges on insulin are probably the reason that it's helping so many people.
Yeah, I think that's totally right.
Well, what do you think is the big problem with insulin in the U.S. right now?
Well, I would look. I mean, I think that we eat a carb-heavy diet. We become insulin resistant, mm-hmm. which, you know, in essence means that, you know, your insulin isn't doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing because it's become resistant to what it has been created to be. And back in the day, insulin oftentimes, when we are going through long periods of fasting and then we had a big meal, and we had meals that included carbs, mm-hmm. it actually was used to store some of that away mm-hmm. for later
right.
when we needed it. But now it's insulin all day long, and so our bodies are just becoming resistant to that. And so we have really, really high insulin levels, and those high insulin levels, from my perspective and things that I've read, are the things that really are attacking our arteries and are mm-hmm. creating the long-term, you know, effects on cardiovascular disease. Look, I'm not a doctor. I read a lot about mm-hmm. it, but everything I'm reading from people who are looking at the studies are saying insulin is the primary driver here, not meat.
Yeah.
You know, you go into if you go into your doctor's office, and I did this once, and your cardiologist say that meat is inflammatory, you need to turn around and go find another cardiologist, right? Because in reality, what is inflammatory is all the carbohydrates that we're putting into our body.
Yeah, for sure.
And
I mean, how would meat? I never understood that. How would meat, like, what was the scientific explanation for how, particularly red meat, would cause inflammation or constrict your blood vessels? Because that doesn't make any sense.
They go from red meat to high LDL cholesterol. High LDL cholesterol, there is an inflammatory when it is at too high of a level. Mm-hmm. And that is the logic path that they use. So I think over and over again, people have shown that actually is not the case.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's a great thing. You know, cows fart, high LDL, all these reasons why you shouldn't be eating meat. That we need to continue to have these, you know, vegan diets, which just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. We're full of all kinds of crap that people spray on these plants to kill all the bugs to keep them from eating the lettuce or whatever.
Even forget about just vegetables in general, which are, you know, all of the propaganda you hear about that. The animals are killed in that production as well. Don't kid yourself. All the weird shit that they spray on them, as you mentioned. And then for these meat alternatives, the preparation it requires to turn them into food, like where you can actually eat it, like soy, for example, I think 63 chemicals are added during the processing to make it tofu. What can you name them? Like when we keep having to explain what an ancestral diet is, it isn't the liver king eating raw liver all the time. Maybe that's good for you. I don't fucking care, to be honest,
right?
Because
I'm not doing it.
I'm not doing that. But ancestral means don't eat anything that didn't exist 200 years ago. That's a pretty, if you have any questions about your diet, the first thing you should do is go down everything in your cabinet and just look at everything. And did this exist 200 years ago? If it didn't, throw it in the fucking garbage because it's poison. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There might be some some instances where that's not the case, but for the most part, it is the case. Now, this is all designed, I think. It's hard for me to believe that the government was that incompetent and then stayed that incompetent for so long and then continues to say this shit. The food pyramid's still out there. They've made some adjustments with fruits and vegetables and shit like that, but it's still out there. And
they just called it a different name.
Yeah, and they're still talking shit about red meat.
Yeah.
Even today. So that's sick care. Like, they're trying to keep people sick. That's what I think. I think, you know, Hanlon's Razor says you don't need to imply malice where incompetence will suffice, but there is a certain level of even putting the blinders on and pretending like all this data doesn't exist that passes the line of incompetence into malicious, in my opinion, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably right. I mean, I think it's probably a little bit more indirect than that, which is, I don't know if they actually want people sick, but they make a lot more money when people are sick.
So they just don't give a shit. I mean, look,
it's you know, the love of money is the root of all evil, right? Like, I think that it's a money greed thing more than it is a, I want you as another human being to be sick, but who knows what intentions are with some of these people.
Yeah, well, so it's definitely to keep you in the healthcare system. They want a customer for life, right?
Yeah. And you look at, and I'm sure you've talked about this on your pod, but like you look at the people who are coming up with our federal guidelines from nutrition, and almost all of them on this panel have some kind of payment from big food or pharma, right? So how do you put people on the FDA nutritional panel if they're getting paid by the likes of Nabisco and PepsiCo and all these kinds of things? Like, that's crazy town to me.
Yeah, I mean, not just that, that's an obvious example. And then the other one is the revolving door between the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry.
Totally.
What the fuck, man? How is that? Like, of all the bills that Congress could pass, a bill ending lobbying in general would be nice, but prohibiting lobbying for anybody who's been elected or worked for the government for some period of time, at least 10 or 100%. 15 years. And then the chair of the FDA, the head of the FDA cannot become the chair of Pfizer. That cannot happen.
Yeah.
In a fucking system that makes sense, that can't happen. But that's the norm. Right. That's how it always happens. And they'll say, like, well, he knows the industry. So does the guy who's worked in the industry the whole time,
right
on the Pfizer side. Let him do that. You can't fucking do that.
Totally. 100%.
But your company's trying to, like, cut into some of this bullshit and give people, I guess, a better option, right? Because my buddy Richard Ryan, one of the founders of Black Rifle, he's been doing this for years.
Cool.
He's been going, he's never had insurance. He gets the cash price for everything.
Yeah.
And they're always looking at him like he's crazy, like he's some like fundamentalist living in the woods or something. He's like, no, it's cheaper. It's like 10% of the normal cost typically is what he gets. But you're trying to provide something so the average working dick doesn't have to go do a million hours of research to figure this out, right?
Totally.
So explain the product.
Yeah, so real quick, I hate to say it, but I was on Obamacare, a few years back, and my 1-year-old was having recurring ear infections, so we went to the ear, nose, and throat doc, who said, "Oh, she's got a hole in her eardrum, so you need to go get it fixed." Went to get it fixed, got the bill. It was a 15-minute procedure. It was $8,000 for 15 minutes, right? And then I got something. And I was like, okay, well, this is what health insurance is for. Like, this is the whole point. Got a note from the insurance company and said, medically unnecessary, they weren't going to pay for it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I had to stroke an $8,000 check to the doc who did this procedure, and I was pissed. I was like, screw this. Like, if they're not going to pay my bills, I'm not paying their bills. And so I quit. I've been uninsured now for about 4 years. Over the period of time, we started building tools to allow people to operate viably within our current screwed up system. Mm-hmm. But operate viably uninsured. And little did I know that $8,000, I could have negotiated that down to probably $1,500.
Just on your own.
Just on my own.
Just by telling them no.
Yeah.
Right.
Say, no, I'm not paying that.
But I don't think people know that.
People don't.
So like in Middle East culture, that would be normal. You would go to, even if you just go to a regular shop, they're selling DVDs or something. It's like, two DVDs for $20. You're like, I'll give you 15. And they're like, all right.
Yeah. Well, you can do that with healthcare too.
Yeah.
People don't know that. Understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so one, you can negotiate your prices down significantly. Two, you can get all your meds for about 10% of what your health insurance plan pays.
Yep.
You can go online and get your doctor's office visit for, you know, Sesame now has a doctor's office visit for $49. Like, you can do
this
all
this. Telehealth, right?
Telehealth.
Yeah.
You can do all these things that are wickedly inexpensive.
And, right? And these, it allows these doctors to operate without significant overhead as well.
Right, exactly.
So the doctor's still making good money. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're getting paid in cash. They don't have to employ a bunch of different people. They can do it out of their house if they want.
Right.
Right.
Right. So then the question is like, okay, what about the big ones? Mm. What about cancer? What about a motorcycle accident? What about a NICU baby? All those types of things. So what we've done is we've created this group of people, 6,000 people to date have signed up with us who have raised their hand and said, hey, if somebody else in our community needs help with something, I'll help out. Right. So I will commit up to $125 a person per month to help out somebody. Right. So if you go and, you know, get in a motorcycle accident, right, and it's $50,000, then I'll go to, you know, 500 people and ask them for $100. I think that math is right. You know, 500 people to ask them for $100. They'll send you have a little, basically a Venmo account with us. It's not a Venmo account, but it's like that. So you get 500 people sending you $100 so that you now have $50,000 in that Venmo account to then now go and pay your bill, but you pay it in cash. So you're getting significantly better prices than anybody else can get.
So is it set up as a like a 501c3 then? Is that considered a charitable contribution, or how does that work for the individual who's giving money to people?
It's peer-to-peer.
It's just... it's just for the feels.
It's like if you have a Venmo account and I have a Venmo account, I can Venmo you $100 right now. And if a bunch of people did that, you'd now have enough money in your Venmo account to go and pay for it. But it's not, we have a little health wallet. We call it a health wallet in our app that acts the exact same way. Right. So we got 6,000 people. We've helped people with like NICU babies. We've had 6 cancer cases. We've had motorcycle accidents, brain hemorrhages, brain surgeries, heart surgeries. We had a $70,000 spine surgery, you know, where a guy got really screwed up a couple weeks ago. So small bills and large bills, you can get funded this way. But the key component here is you're paying in cash.
Right.
And so, the cost is significantly less. Like I said earlier, we're getting 50% better pricing for our members than the seventh largest company in the planet, United Healthcare. Right. So that's the key to this is if you can pay in cash, you can get significantly better prices.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, so I'm looking at your website. One of the case studies is a guy from Dallas.
Gal from Dallas, probably.
Maybe a guy. It doesn't say. Member from Dallas is what it says. It doesn't say what the procedure is. So
hysterectomy.
Was it?
Yeah.
I don't. Is that what it was? I don't know. I don't see it on here. But
sorry. Yeah, I think it's.
Oh no, cervical cancer. Yeah, you're right.
Cervical cancer. Yeah. Yeah.
And needed a hysterectomy. Yeah. Negotiated. Crowd helped her negotiate the cost down from $48,000.
Yeah.
To $91.90.
Yeah.
So 20% of what the original cost would have been, and then 142 members funded her procedure. For $65 per member, basically.
Yeah. So we went out and asked 142 people to give this woman $65. She got that all on her account, and then she paid the hospital directly for that procedure on the day of the procedure, and that's why she got that good of a price.
So one of the things I tell people on this show a lot is if you want to stop the spread of government and make it smaller and more manageable, the easiest way to do that is to solve problems before the government gets there. Because when the government shows up, if nobody's got their hand out, they don't have any power there anymore. And one of the ways to do that is to solve problems for other people. So you're providing people the opportunity, and not just the opportunity, but the technology to pull people off of the government tit, basically.
Exactly.
Right? And out of this fucked up, nefarious, predatory industry.
Yeah.
That's a pretty novel idea.
It's bringing back community, right? I mean, I think back in the 1970s, again, you know, if somebody came and lived next to us, we'd bring them a thing of cookies and said, welcome to the neighborhood. Now we kind of hardly even know. One thing we want to know is how much did the person sell their house for? Because it's, you know, an indicator of how much my house is worth. But I think that's a product of the government and health insurance plans in this case getting in between us and our neighbor so that we don't feel any responsibility for, you know, the people next to us, the people in our community.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, in essence, what we're trying to do is build a community of people who are like, hey, I'm willing to help other people. And by the way, these people are, the BMI is about 4 to 5 points below the national average. Their average age is 34. our number one crowdfunding request, which is 40% of our requests, are pregnancies. 30% is active injuries, which means that these are people out doing stuff that get hurt. They fall off their mountain bike or whatever. And so if I came to you and I said, hey, you know, you have to spend $1,000 with United Healthcare this month, go send a check to United Healthcare. You're like, man, that sucks. Or I come to you and I say, hey, you need to send some money, or will you send some money to somebody who just had a baby or fell off their mountain bike or tore their ACL playing basketball.
Yeah.
Like that to me, I'm like, sure, man, I'll help that because you know, that person's doing what they need to be doing. And I'm not subsidizing, you know, all these other people who are taking crappy care of themselves and, you know, eating the boxed bagged crap out of the middle of the grocery store. You know, most of our people are keto, carnivore, high, you know, high animal fat, high protein type of people. They're primarily libertarian leaning type folks. So the people that we've been attracted, that have been attracted to us, are ones who want to rid themselves of government intervention in their healthcare. And they just happen to be more fit, a little younger, a little bit more male versus female, and a lot of young families, right? Yeah. Which is like, man, I want to be a part of that tribe.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's the reason that I think people get insurance is because they're worried that they're not going to be able to cover the expense when the time comes.
FUD.
Yeah. I mean, it, that really is just what it is. So if there's another option where, you know, you... We didn't have health insurance, wasn't a thing until the 80s, really, right?
Yeah, it was codified in the early 70s.
Yeah,
yeah.
But people en masse, they didn't use that until the 80s.
Yeah.
And we just depended on our families or whatever to help out when those situations arose. And as soon as health insurance became common in the late 80s and early 90s, bankruptcies from them or from healthcare expenses started to go up. So we know that the industry is not set up to help people. This one is, right? I like it. That's why we had you on the show, because I enjoyed this. This is the kind of business and technology that aligns with not just my political philosophy, but my life philosophy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're giving people the opportunity to help other people. You're giving people that need help the opportunity to get that help without the government getting involved in it. So I don't think there's not a better kind of business, in my opinion.
200,000 people last year, 200,000 families last year who had health insurance went bankrupt due to a health event. So you had health insurance, you still went bankrupt, right? It's like the system is totally screwed up. There are zero people that have gone bankrupt on crowd health over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? I think there's something like 70 or 80 million people who have health debt on their credit card. Like, that's ridiculous. And so, I mean, that's why we've set this thing up is, you know, I've been in my story, I just told you, right? Like I've been fortunate. I can pay an $8,000 bill. The vast majority of Americans don't have $8,000 sitting around. So when their health plan says no, they're not going to pay for it. Mm. They can figure out a way to pay for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, look, that's, then you pay 18.5% interest on
your credit card.
The credit on the medical debt that you couldn't afford in the fucking first place.
Yeah.
Right. So we're just compounding it. Again, it's a bust out. This is the mob. This is how the mafia operates. Look, this has been revealing. Great show. Tell everybody where they can find you and find your products before we get out of here.
Yeah, joincrowdhealth.com is our website. You can follow us on Twitter, Join Crowd Health, Instagram, Join Crowd Health. We'd love for you to join us. We get pretty sassy. I think, you know, again, the reason why I wanted to be on your show is I feel like your audience is very much aligned with our philosophy. And so I'd love for y'all to consider, you know, coming over and joining us, man. Don't go get an Obamacare plan. I mean, these things are just propping up a government, you know, cartel, as we talked about. Give us a shot. We've done a great job with people. You can check out our reviews. They were awesome.
We'll do that. I mean, I'll talk to Ross about it, because I think we spend something like $3,500 a month on health insurance for our employees. Seems like a lot, considering none of them ever go to the doctor unless they're having a fucking baby,
right?
You know what I mean? That's the only time they go. But yeah, we'll definitely look into that. Thank you for coming today, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure, anytime. And thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen. Boom. Clap. Done.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
That was great.
Good stuff.
Thank you for coming.